and both bachelors up there. And then the Andrews came out from England and homesteaded in Razor Bluff. George married Florence Andrews, and the other brother married a, forget their name, I used to know it too. Oh, Wilson, one of the Wilsons. Then they want to come to Athabasca, boom on. And George got a job up here of road supervisor for the provincial government.
Would you like to guess what year that was?
That could be about, yes, 1912, when my father-in-law came up from Saskatchewan. He had homesteaded at Lang, or liked, he was staying at Lang doing carpenter work. And he came up here to join George, because George told him how good it was. So now there was three Millses here, George, Jim, and Bob. And they all had the families here. Jim built this house that Mrs. McKinley used to have over here. Bob built the Muriel Shoemaker house, you know, on that corner, right up here, but they, well, she still got it. She still owns that place, but they tore the house down not long ago, the old house that I was married in. Now, Bob only stayed that summer. He worked on the hotel. He worked on the Crystal Lodge. He built that. At least he worked way on the building. And a house that Joe Gay, it's on Philip Gay's place now. It's a house that was moved from the creek down here. He built that during that summer. And that house is still in existence. And then Bob went back. He didn't like Bush up here for him. He wanted to get back farming. So he went back to this Bengal. He filed a homestead there and built a house that fall and got his family up there. But that is where, see, then when the oldest girl, which was my wife, got ready for high school, Ben Goff only went as high as grade 8. Well, Jim Mills had moved to Edmonton.
Sorry, I got to interrupt you for a minute. This Ben Goff, where was that?
About 100 miles south of Regina.
Oh, I see, yeah, okay.
Yeah, about 20 miles from the border.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jim, he and his family had moved back to Edmonton. And Jim, afterwards, he did carpenter work around Edmonton, worked around until the war. Then he enlisted. He was 4 years over there on the last day of the war. That'd be 1917.
18.
He got killed. So she was a lone widow with three children. And so when my wife was ready to go to high school, they got her aunt to take her, you see. So she stayed with my aunt in Edmonton and went to Victoria High and several places. And then she used to come up here holidays sometimes. Pretty far to go to Bengal, but she used to go down there for Christmas. Well, then when she got through and got her teacher certificate, George came out to see my people, friends of his, and he said, "Now look, I want my daughter, my niece," he said, "to have this school. I can get it." He was a good friend of old Bill Curtis on the school board. He says, "I can get it." He said, "But I won't let her have it unless you board it." So my mother, oh, big undertaking, but George, he was a persuasive talker. All right, we'll board her. So that's why I went to my wife. She boarded with us, you see? And she taught school in 1921. Yeah. I think it's us, though, right here. Yeah. First grow on school number 369 East, built about 1917. Started, opened, no, situated on the, that. I could have added to that, Frank, that my wife taught in 1921 there. Yeah. I thought I had, but I didn't.
And my cousin taught there, Don Johnson, about 1937, I would
yeah,
say.
Yeah, I guess so.
About 1937.
See, Larry taught in 25.
You're talking about Larry Dent?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Catherine taught in 26.
Catherine?
Galloway.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she all bought it with us. Mm-hmm. And, why, we knew them all there. I was secretary treasurer of that school for 8 years.
Now, a couple of points that have been coming up. A.G. Mackay would be the first provincial member for Athabasca when...
No, J.R. Boyle.
J.R. Boyle was the first member.
Boyle, afterwards.
And he became a judge later on.
Yeah, he was...
Boyle, was Boyle a cabinet minister?
No, but he was put in the Senate afterwards, I think, or made a judge. No, he made a judge, yeah.
Now, is there any chance that the town of Boyle was named after him?
Could have been, yeah.
Okay, and then Boyle was succeeded by A.G. Mackay, or
I'm
was he?
I'm not so sure about that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That I can get from the provincial archives. It's one of the things I want to get.
Yeah.
And A.G. Mackay was succeeded by George Mills.
He was one of the cleverest criminal lawyers in the province.
A.G. Mackay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was from Edmonton. He never lived here.
Yeah.
Well, now, I've often heard somebody say that there was an A.G. Mackay who was very prominent in the early days, and there was also an A.C. Mackay.
Let's see, Huey. Huey Mackay wasn't a smart man, but he's a nice man. I think he was single. I think A.G. was. And he was the looked after A.G.'s interest in the ranch. He stayed right there.
Was he a brother?
Yeah, a brother. Brother of A.G.'s.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, old Huey.
Well, did he ever live in Athabasca?
No, he lived in... Old Huey lived just up there at the ranch. Otherwise in Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
Then A.G. died, and George Mills ran for member. And I can tell you another story, Frank. It'd be quite interesting to you. Maybe your dad told you already. But I was prominent in this. As you know, I've generally been a conservative. But in those days, I wasn't. I was a USA for a while. Afterwards, of course, social credit. But J.P. Evans was USA. Then old Jack Frame was U.S. was liberal member for this district.
Yeah, now just a minute.
Yeah.
Let's stop for a while.
Jack was member in there after George Mills.
Did he come right after George?
I don't know.
Okay, go ahead. Because
anyway,
at least I can check up.
Jack Frame did a very peculiar thing. Backed by Bosman and Bill McLeod. When I say Bosman, that would be a good inkling.
Uh-huh.
He went to work and changed coats, as they said. Oh, the Echo wrote up, not the Echo, but the Northern News wrote up some articles about old Jock. He wrote a poem about old Jock who changed his coat in the middle of the accident. And switched from liberal to USA. Then we had the big convention. J.P. up there running his UFA against J.P. Evans in the convention. Now, the system of the UFA was different from the old liberal system. You had local formed. You form a local and have 10 members, and you sent in $10 that constituted a local with one delegate allowed. If you had 11 members, you had to delegate right to two, so you sent in $11. It made no difference whether you had any members or not. Head office wanted $10 or $11. You got one man to be chairman and one man to be secretary, and you had a local. Bosman caught on to this. So they formed, him and Bill McLeod went all over and formed locals. They come in here. I was a delegate for J.P. Evans. He had a legitimate local out there. Melvin Redden is another one. He was a delegate for a local down there. And us fellows all sat there going to put J.P. Evans in, you see. Get him elected. They come in there, they swamp the convention with about 100 delegates. Well, we walked out after the election. We were swamped. Frame was our new delegated UFA member. He was nominated. We were mad. Melvin and I and four or five more, some from Boyle and some from Paxton around, walked down to the store and saw your dad. They said, will you run as liberal member? Again, wouldn't have to do anything else. Just happened to run as liberal member. And we'll throw our work right behind you. And we'll work for you. He said, let me know. He said, I'll let you know after supper. So we stayed in to supper. And that night, I was one of them that he met. And Redden was another. He said, yes, I'll take it. You boys back me up. We started this campaign. Got the nomination easy. Just a matter of taking it. And we covered that whole district. And we worked hard. And we got him in easy. So, you know, that was such a blow to old Jack Frame, I think that was the start of his death. He didn't believe it possible.
I wouldn't be surprised. Yes, he died very, very soon after that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have a lot of echoes here describing all that.
I guess
that campaign, Old Conquest, was a red hot liberal.
Yeah.
At least he was very much against Frame. And of course, later on, he was very much against Eberhardt.
Yeah.
Really strong against Eberhardt.
Yeah.
But I can remember that campaign. I was old enough to remember quite a little bit about it.
Oh, yes.
Probably one of the most exciting campaigns they ever had because of that turnover.
Yeah.
And, of course, politics was much bigger in those days because sure. People didn't have anything else to do.
Now, the next thing they pulled, the USA went out, of course, naturally. Brownlee resigned.
Yeah.
Smith came in for a short time. It failed when Eberhardt came in. Now, the Eberhardt, the social credit system was pretty near the same, but you call them social credit groups. All right, I worked hard for that party. And I had my local formed up here at Beaumont. Legitimate local, all good members. And I was backing up Clarence Aid for members. Well, sir, George Meyer, Bosman, get a good combination. They do the same thing again, but more vicious.
Mm-hmm.
They went out around the lake there to the Indians and they formed groups, social credit groups, and their money into Kennedy at the head office. There was groups. But they forgot one thing. But in the days when I didn't have any competition, when things were running smooth, they elected me zone organizer to this constituency. Zone organizer in the Social Credit Party had a lot of power. So, you cannot form a group without the sanction of the zone organizer. It has to be approved before it can be passed and allowed delegates. At a big convention up in Perryvale. And of course, being the zone organizer, I was there along with the chairman up at the head table. And George Meyer Barton was there with all their delegates. Indians, everything else. People that had no interest. So I said, to the attention of the meeting and to the attention to the organizer from Edmonton, I couldn't pass these because they were not legitimate. I'd throw them out, wouldn't give them consent to them. Oh, they wanted proof. So, I forget his name now, but Kennedy was the head one.
Orvis?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, look, he said, can you prove what you're saying? I said, yes. I wouldn't be saying it if I couldn't. Can you take me to individual cases? I'll take time off and go around the district with you. I'll declare this convention null and void. His own organizer won't agree with it. He said, it's fraudulent. All right, you've made that accusation. Now he said, we'll go get the proof. All right. So people get pretty excited then. Old George Meyer and Jim Appleby had a fight that day. But anyway, that was a lively meeting. Anyway, Goodwin was his name, this fellow, yeah. Him and I started. Well, the first one was a good friend of ours, a neighbor, Ed Junk. You possibly remember.
I remember that family.
He'd been a liberal ever since he was born, and he died one. I went to Ed. I said, Ed, you had the list. Go over a new group. How come you change your politics? What do you mean, change the politics? I said, you are president of group number so-and-so. That's a damn lie. Goodwin sitting right there. I said, look, Ed. Here was all the executive. His wife was the secretary of treasurer. Oh, he blew straight up. He was going to sue George Myers. I said, that's fine. So Goodwin's taking notes, you know. Fine. Went on, nothing. Never heard of him. No. How the hell did my name get there? I never gave any money. No, they were putting up the money. Somebody was. So, went down to a breed, the Nipshanks down here, who didn't know beans about politics. And same thing. I traveled around the whole bunch. The whole thing was a farce, right from start to finish. He had two or three legitimate ones straight down there, but they were voting for JPN, so were the old ones. So, George White declared it, and then we had the next one. The next convention, I forget where we held it.
Was J.P. Evans the social creditor by that time?
No, he wasn't. He stayed UFA.
Or he stayed UFA, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think he died UFA.
I wouldn't be surprised, yeah. Well, now, just a minute. On this story of Meyer and Bosman, who were they boosting for the nomination?
I really don't know who it was that they were putting up.
Do you remember under that, under the first social credit, the convention had to pick four potential candidates, and then Eberhardt himself selected one of those four? Do you remember that?
Yeah, but it wasn't exactly Eberhardt. It was Eberhardt and...
And the committee, presumably.
Three men.
Do you remember who the four were?
No, I don't.
Because Tate eventually got the nomination.
Oh, Tate got the nomination, got elected.
Yeah.
The next time he didn't, Gordon Lee got it.
Well, Tate quit.
Yeah.
And
Gordon Lee got it.
What is his name? Cross. Eberhardt brought in Cross from as a a parachute candidate because he wanted an engineer in his cabinet to look after
oil. But Gordon Lee was a member.
Yeah, well, Gordon will Cross quit, and then Gordon Lee came in after that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
Tate got a government appointment.
Oh, yes.
Now, what happened to him after that, I don't know.
No.
Was it? Yeah, we had this cabinet minister. Tate resigned, and this cabinet minister. Ross. Ross.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Not Cross.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the history of the social credit. It was a Well, it was a good thing in a way, I suppose, because you could have abused that position as zone organizer.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to, give me a lot of power.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to get a perfect system. Okay, let's go back now. Just a little bit farther, because I want to talk to you about this Crystal Lodge. I've heard about it. Was it built by somebody named Crystal? Why do they call it the Crystal Lodge?
I don't know. I remember it was erected. It was painted yellow. It was very conspicuous. It was two or three stories high.
Where was it?
Full of rooms.
Where was it?
Right there where Russell's house is now. You know, Russell and Mrs. You know, Galloway's house was on the corner.
Yeah.
And then the next two lots was on those.
South?
South, yeah. Between there and those two houses, the old Frenchman.
Mm. Rochambeau.
Yeah.
The old bandmaster.
Yeah.
The old...
They're still there.
And it was painted yellow. And
yeah.
Were there lots of windows? Would that be why they would call it Crystal?
No, ordinary, you know, window to each room.
Now, you see, later on I knew a man named Crystal. At least I didn't know him, but my parents knew him. And he owned the King Edward Hotel in Edmonton. I wonder if it was the same Crystal.
Don't think so. No. I'll tell you who owned it when I remember. I never paid much attention to it until Mrs. Secord's first husband. Now, what the hell was her name? He died. Was it Pomeroy? Seems to me like it. I remember Mrs. Pomeroy. They owned it. And he died. And then Mrs. Secord, it failed. And Percy and Bert Taylor bought it and tore it down from sold to the farmers. And some of the lumber's in that old house up that I had up at the Gromont, where my dad had. So that was built in 1917, so it was tore down. Percy and Bert must have torn that down around 1916. Yeah.
How big was it? Was that a two-story, three-story building?
Well, I believe it was either two or three. No, it was two anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's a very... and it was a rooming house.
Yeah, a rooming house. And Mrs. Secord then, when she got that, I don't know, I guess she mainly lost it for taxes too.
Mm-hmm.
She married old Jack.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, as far as I don't know whether the old lady's still living or not. Oh, you can't be. But you got kids.
Did Jack ever operate a kind of a trading post here?
No, his brother Dick. Jack was with him. But Jack was an alcoholic bum.
I remember that, yeah.
He couldn't have any responsibility.
I remember that, but there was a suggestion. You see, Dick sold out to the Hudson Bay.
Yeah.
There's a picture on the wall.
Dick?
Yep.
Oh, I see. Oh, yeah.
His son presented it to us when we opened the new library.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a story that Dick sold out to the Hudson Bay, and of course, under the commercial terms, he promised that he'd never operate in this area again. But that, he did. But that he continued to operate through his brother.
Well, the Hudson Bay would not allow any freight to come in from Secord on their trail here. So what do? They crossed up here ahead of the trail. They went in by Jules, up the hill and crossed the creek. They called the old Whiskey Trail.
Mm-hmm. And you know where it is.
That old stopping house, that old post, is still sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen
pictures
it yet?
Yeah, we have pictures of it.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a few.
Oh.
Yeah, Bob Tannis and I went out and took pictures of...
Oh, yeah. sure.
From that whiskey trail. This is a conversation with Mr. Leo Noddings, a long-time resident of the Athabasca area. Now, this house, you say, built in 1910.
Yeah, August 1910. And that was, afterwards I filed when I was 18. I filed on this quarter.
Oh, when your father built the house,
I was 11 years old. In there, I'm 13.
He didn't own this quarter when he built on it.
No, but
yeah. Well, was the land surveyed to be?
Yeah.
When would that survey have been? Can you remember?
Somebody told me 1906. I'm not sure. I think I got that from old Adelore.
And was that a survey made by somebody named Cote?
Yeah, looks right.
Dale Cote.
Yep.
Now, this man, Cote, yeah, he'd be from Edmonton or Ottawa or something like that.
Here they are right here, you see. I don't think that works. So this is section 3. Now, that's where this quarter was. The south west of 2.
Mm-hmm.
Right there, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Now then, the dad's, what he filed on a little later, was the south east of 3.
South east.
My brother filed on the northeast of 3.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see, yeah.
And we also own this one. That would be the not the south east of 10.
Mm-hmm.
This one here, my wife filed out, which was the north west of 2. We had the 5 quarters there.
Well, now, just a minute. At that time, could you only file on one quarter?
Yeah.
After you approved that one quarter up, could you file on another?
No, you see, but later on, the wives could file on them. Mm-hmm. My mother never did file on one, but there weren't many left then.
Now, you said that you filed on that when you were 11?
18.
Oh, 18.
See, I just squatted on it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then when I became 18, I filed on it. This one here, my dad bought under the second homestead right for $3
yes.
an acre. He lacked the $3 an acre, so he was between times arguing the matter with Ottawa and back and forth, and he was a great letter writer, and he finally got it for just the $10. But then we started breaking it up, and we built the house here.
Just a minute. You're telling me new things all the time, so slow down. If you had a quarter section, according to that, they would allow you to buy another one for $3 an acre?
No. My dad had filed in Saskatchewan before a certain period.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was therefore going to be allowed a second homestead right, which they granted him, but you had to pay $3 an acre. The $10 filing fee. And then over a period, I think 10 years, you had to pay $3 an acre for it.
So that in the whole of Canada, you could only file on one homestead once. And then if you moved from that homestead, you had to buy on the
well,
$3
yes.
an acre plan.
But in the early days when my dad first came, you could have a homestead and a preemption.
Yeah, and I've heard the term preemption. Now, go ahead with
that. Now, that I believe is $3 an acre. He had one of those in Saskatchewan, which he didn't pay for, so he sold it to the fellow practically nothing. He's right.
Well, then, could he get another preemption after he came up here?
No, I think preemptions went out.
I suppose it's odd because there was lots of land and not very many people.
Sure.
Well, now, the road between Athabasca and your place would cover about 25 miles, wouldn't it?
It was about 21.
21 miles. Did it follow pretty much the present course, or was it closer to the river?
No. There were two roads. You could take the south road, which came out of Truss's old place, you know, which is now Steve Yannick's. And you go in here by Haggis's, and then you go through South Athabasca and come out that way to get away from these muskegs on the north. Mm-hmm. See, we had one big problem, that big muskeg there down where Smith's got his place now.
Oh, yes, there was a big muskeg there, that's right.
And you meandered around that, and then you cut across in by Hein Spence's, and where McGregor's got now, well, in there.
No, just a minute. What Spence?
Percy. And then you go along there, you take west again, until you come to a little lake. There's a little lake back on the next quarter, I believe, north of Percy Spence's or north of George Spence's. Not George, old man Spence. The brick house. In there, there's a little lake. And you went right along the south shore of the little lake. And that was a heck of a road, too.
Just a minute. What was the name of the Spence that owned the brick house?
I don't know what the old man's name, but that was Percy's dad.
There was George and Percy?
And Bill.
Bill was the father?
No, Bill was the other brother.
They
were married.
Oh, yes. And then their father was there also.
Oh, the father and mother built that brick house the bricks out of the old Athabasca Hotel.
Was that so? After the Athabasca Hotel burned down?
What they did. It didn't burn down, did it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and this was a frame house built, just like it is now, the same present house.
Mm-hmm.
And they got the bricks and they brick veneered it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people got the bricks in that old business, the brick hotel.
Well, now, why did they take the old hotel down?
Oh, like a business. Boom went out from under the place.
That is the Athabasca Hotel.
Yeah, the Athabasca Hotel. Sitting right where Buster's garage does now.
Yes, would you by any chance remember about what year that was?
Did they tore it down?
Mm-hmm.
I think about 16 or 17.
Now, if you look at that picture and see both hotels there, and you also see the Lang Block. See? That's the... That's the block that old George Lang
built. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is it? No, George. No.
Yeah, you can... Well, yes. You can read... You can read Lang right on it.
You can, eh?
Yep.
My eyes aren't quite good enough for that.
There's also a very strong little circle that magnifies there that makes...
Gosh, you may be right.
Yep.
See, that's where the bus depot stood, eh?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. The bus depot was right there, and then this is where Buster's garage is. Yeah, you're right.
And there is an AGT building on that corner where the Lang Black was at that time.
Gibby's restaurant was down there someplace. But that was
Gibby's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll give you rest up.
Now, if you go up the hill, is the old original St. Gabriel's Catholic Church. Remember the one that burned down?
There. This one here?
Yeah.
That's the Catholic Church.
That is the Catholic Church.
Yeah, that's the Catholic Church.
And then over to
that
the
is
left
the old hospital
is
right
the old
there.
Hospital.
Yep.
And I believe that hospital burned down about 1917. But I'm not sure.
Yeah, around that. Yep. Because I know in 1914, according to McGregor's book, old John Short or Joe Short died in it. It mentions that in the book.
John Short.
Eh?
John, the famous Johnny Short?
Short, yeah.
And he died in that hospital. And what book are you talking about?
Which?
What book were you telling me about, did you mention? Where it mentions that?
In, McGregor's book.
The Paddle Wheels.
Buckets too.
Yeah. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
I believe Muriel Shoemaker was born in this hospital.
He was, eh?
Mm-hmm. The only thing I can remember about it, I can remember walking over the foundations when I was small and being told that there had been a hospital there.
Three people died in that fire.
Is that right?
Yeah, three older people got trapped in the upstairs rooms.
I didn't know that. Was there ever any particular cause of that fire?
No, they didn't. Fire just happened in those days, I guess.
Yeah, heating was pretty primitive, and so was lighting.
Yep. Now, you see, there was two kids there in Grosmont that weren't confirmed yet. Roman Catholics, all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And Leopold Major was one, and I was the other. Elizabeth, Leopold's sister, had been confirmed the time before, and some years before. So, they brought us in. Money was hard to get, so they brought us in, and all the kids from all over the territory, I guess there was close to 75, anyway. I don't know where they put the girls up, but that's where they put the boys, in the hospital. The hospital's empty, kind of. The sisters looked at us. We slept there, we had rooms. And, of course, we were under strict orders, you know, for the sisters to be in bed by 9 o'clock. Well, Paul and I, we came in the country, we'd always been used to swim. So I looked out the window. No way of getting downstairs in front because the sister sat there at the desk. So I looked and it was one of these iron fire escapes, you know, that went up the wall. I said, look, Paul, I said, we can get out the window. But we children swing down, swing in the same way. We'll be sure to leave our window open when we leave. Oh, good. So I remember we looked in the drawers with the letter in there. We died if we didn't find three cigars. Well, that's fine for boys, too. You see, we were... Oh, this was about 1911. And we went to work and took these three cigars and went off in the bush there. The bush grew tight up pretty well. We slipped off there and we smoked these cigars. And I could smoke them because I had been smoking before. But Paul got very sick on his. Anyway, after he stayed up a while, we went down to the old Star Theater, or Starland, or whatever it was, and we took in a show. And after the show was through, we had a lunch, and we came back up the same way as we went. So I always remember. And the parade, the hospital had a big, oh, veranda, as wide as it could go. Must have been 12 feet wide. All of the veranda in front. You come up those stairs, there were stairs up the street, you know, too, from the Catholic Church to the hospital. the sidewalk was down that way. And then a bunch of us boys were sitting there, you know, with our hats on, waiting for something or other, and saw the priest and the bishop coming out. Ah, we didn't know what supposed to do. So, old Father Mary coming along with the bishop, the bishop gal. Oh.
Just move your arm.
We got to this, he got to the foot of the stairs and looked. He says, off with your hats and down on your knees. Well, so we just like regimentation, she went down. And the bishop came along with his ring, and we had to kiss his ring, and he blessed us all. So, I didn't care much for that. Too much discipline for me. So, anyway, I looked down again, and later on I saw the bishop coming up the street. Alone that time. A lady with the name of Mrs. Gautier. She was coming to the meeting, you see. Took down on her knees, and he put his ring out, and she kissed it, he blessed her, and she went on, no word spoken. I thought, this is a queer deal. The subject of that man. I'd never seen a bishop before. Seen lots of priests in Saskatchewan. So, I think that was one of the reasons worked in my mind. It made me rebel in the end. That's the fear discipline.
Well, now, you mentioned two things that I want to ask you about. Where was the Star Theater?
It would be right there where, very close to where Kuhn's store was.
Mm-hmm. That's about where I thought.
You see, Farrell's store was on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what his first name was, just Farrell's store.
Romeo.
Hmm?
Romeo Farrell?
I guess so.
We have pictures of his store.
Yeah.
Now, the second thing that you mentioned that I wanted to ask you about, because I'm beginning to remember now. From the bottom of the of that road past the Catholic Church, which is now, well, Litchfield Avenue, up that way, there was a wooden sidewalk. And that wooden sidewalk had steps, didn't it?
The one going south, yes.
The one going south had steps.
Yep.
I'd forgotten that, but I can remember now when I was very small going up those steps.
The one going up the United Church had steps.
I didn't know that. Did it?
Well, they put a lot of lumber because lumber was cheap. Easy to get.
Well, when I remember, I don't even remember there being a sidewalk going up to the United Church. That is not from Litchfield Avenue.
No, it didn't start from Litchfield Avenue, did it? The sidewalk's there. It was on the level then, and then when it started to go up, you know.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Up the hill there. Then going west, past this Lang's Block, you know, down this street here, you came upon the side store.
Yes, I remember that store.
And the liquor store. That's where Pahalik lived. I mean, Pahalik owned that afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, first of all, Lewis's. Stan Lewis had to run a garage there. Mm-hmm. For a while or some darn thing. But anyway, Jack Desard had his store there, and he owned the liquor store. He used to sell the liquor, you see.
Oh.
Hard liquor. And that was right joining out of it, to just a little bit to the east of it, well, on it. And he had a clerk work there the name of Posey. And I remember old Jack Beside, we dealt there a lot. In fact, we dealt exclusively after Revion burnt down. And then Jack lost his first place. And then he quit there, and he built this brick store down the corner. He married again to a Flynn. He had one daughter. He had never had any children with his first wife. But the...
Well, now, this Flynn girl, had she been married before?
No, she was single.
Because
both had sisters.
I remember three Lessard children. There was Marguerite was a girl, and Jack was a boy, and then Patsy was the youngest.
She was Patsy, wasn't she?
Yeah, she would be the one that you're referring to, but there were two others.
Oh.
So either he had them with his first wife.
I tell you, she was a very good friend of Mrs. Cook's.
Mrs. Lessard?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mrs. Lessard had the cabin next to ours at Peace Lake.
Did he?
For years, as a matter of fact, until last year. Now, of course, Mrs. Lessard has been dead for years.
Patsy, too?
No, Patsy owned that cabin right up until last year.
Is Patsy dead now?
No, no, Patsy was up last year. Hmm. And last year, also, she sold the cabin.
Hmm.
She married Archie Volklander, who was in the U.S. Marines.
In relation to these Volklanders?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. The old man's brother?
Son.
Hmm.
He'd be a brother of George and a brother of Claire. And some of the Volklanders, anyway, never took Canadian citizenship.
The ones that I knew were the ones that went to school. I knew the old man, old Herb.
So did I. Yeah.
He'd be a brother to Herb.
Who
married Patsy?
No, son of Herb's.
One of the young ones?
Yep.
Holy Moses, he must have been a lot younger.
Patsy's only about 45 now.
Oh, that's the daughter.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about Jack's original wife.
The original first
not
wife?
Not the first wife, second wife.
I don't know what her first name was. No, she's dead.
I was thinking she should.
Yeah,
be.
She's been dead for years.
Although she was around the age of Mrs. Cook.
Okay, I want to talk to you now about something that we discussed once before. And that was Cote's survey.
Mm-hmm.
You remember telling me once he was French. And he gave most of these lakes up here French names.
That's right, yeah.
And those French names have basically, a lot of them have been changed since then, and I would like to know that because...
Yeah.
That to me is quite interesting. For instance, Batiste Lake has never changed.
No, Lac Batiste, yeah.
But then other lakes, like Island Lake...
Lac Fantôme, they call it Ghost Lake.
Ghost Lake was Lac... Oh, I see. It was Phantom Lake in French, and they call it Ghost Lake in English.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
No, Lac La Croche hasn't changed.
Lac La Croche. Oh, yes.
Lac Lange hasn't changed. Long Lake. Yes, it has. I didn't know. Until the other day. I was talking to Frank Attlee, and he shocked me. He said, Jenkins Lake. Oh, my God, I said, how much more are you people going to distort things?
I don't know how. I noticed that during the last census.
Yeah.
Jenkins Lake, and I phoned up somebody out there, one of the morts, and asked him where Jenkins Lake was. It was Long Lake. And they said, yes, I don't know why they changed it to Jenkins Lake, but was it Long Lake when Cody named it, or was it something else?
No, it was Long Lake, Lac Lange.
Lac Lange.
And Lake des Cerfs, Bear Lake.
And of course the other one is Island Lake.
Lake des Îles, yeah.
Lake
des Îles.
Des Îles, oh yes.
Yeah, with 13 islands in it. But there is legends, well, not only legends, but truth too. I mean, we got the story, I know personally about the story of Baptiste Campion. I never knew him, he was dead before I came. But I know his old squaw. She was old then. And that was old Lady Campion. She had a bunch of grandchildren around her, I don't know whether any were children or not, but I could take you to the foundation of the where her shack was. You know, when you go around Baptiste Lake, by the creek here, the first bend, you know, past Swains? By Swains is a creek coming in. There's a bridge there.
That's where you're going from north to south.
Yeah. And if you were to see the first, there's a trail up the hill, up very far, just up a little hill. It's not more than 100 yards. That's where the Campion shack stood. We lived. That tree made his big catch of beaver right around that mouth of that and up that creek. First day he was here before he brought his family in. It was such a darn good trapping ground, he sent three Stanley at St. Albert. Brought them in that fall.
And there were a lot of beaver in Baptiste Lake at that time.
Beaver all over. It was in this land right here, there's a creek going through from Ghost Lake. There's beaver dams all over. I've plowed them up and gone right over them.
What could a person sell a beaver skin for at that time? Do you remember?
I don't know. Because you see, the beaver had gone out when we came. They were practically extinct. I've heard stories about what the Hudson Bay used to make the Indians.
Yes, but that was...
But I mean, the exact what a price of a beaver would be, I never found out. Because I never trapped one. But I know rats were from 15 to 30 cents in 1911. Because the winter of 1911, we caught a big amount, but in 1912, we caught over 1,000.
That's right.
Island Lake. That's a lot of work skinning and stretching those.
For about $100 to $150 at the most.
Yeah. 30 cents for big ones. Well, then 25, they'd average 25. Yep. $25 a hundred. But you must remember that $250 was a lot of money.
Yes.
They keep you a year.
I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this picture of your father's first house interests me because, as you say, my father slept there. And I remember him telling me the story so often about how it took him all day to go there with Georgie Mills.
Yep.
And they got there and it was, they took your father a paper and he hadn't seen one for a long time, they said. And they stayed overnight and came back the next day.
Yeah. Well, they went up to the ranch. I went up to the ranch, right?
Yeah, no, about George Mills, because I remember him when I was quite small, and George was the member of the legislature for here, not at the time we're talking about, but I think later, right? And George was related to you by marriage.
Yep.
In what way? Your wife was his sister?
His brother's, I married his brother's daughter.
You married his brother's daughter. Now, you said that he had a ranch, and I'd never heard about that.
He had a ranch where the present Orville Hayes place is, which is 10 miles this side of Smith, 20 miles from my place, Rowland. And he was in partnership with A.G. Mackay, who was the member before George. In fact, when A.G. died, left a vacancy, and George Vernon got elected.
That was provincially.
Yeah. Yeah. A.G. McQuaid was quite a friend of my dad's, and Mills's had been ever since they came in. Now, the story of George Mills was that he came in from Whitlock, he homesteaded.